Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen an overview of Shaivam and Siddhanta. The title is Schools of Shaivam Continuation, presented by Shiva Madhusudanan Kalai Chelvam. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Vijnana Bhairava Tantram, that Tantram which was bestowed to Duruvasa through Parameshwara to get into the Abheda Jnana school, which was in turn given over to the Manasaputra Trayambaka through Duruvasa. And this has 112 prescribed yogic poses or exercises, asanas, which gives a sense of union with God, a sense of self-realization which helps you achieve the union with God. Please understand, this is an Abheda school, so union with God as such is what is to be realized. So Vijnana Bhairava Tantram speaks about various different options for asanas to understand the union. Then you have finally Kularnava Tantra, which speaks about Guru, the Sishyas, the role of Guru, role of Sishyas, and more on the mantras to be initiated, various different practice traditions that are a part of the self-realization journey one takes through the Kashmira Shaiva school. So that is a very, very brief introduction to Kashmira Shaivam. So you have three concepts that are important there, which is Shiva, Shakti, and the Spanda, or the pulse, the pulses, the vibrations, the divine vibes. And the world is considered to be a manifestation of Shiva, and every part of it is nothing but the manifestation of God. And connecting yourself through the positive, the pulsating vibes, the divine vibes, helps you on a progress for self-realization, which in turn leads to identifying yourself as the inner self, which is the truth, which is full of bliss and love. And this kind of a self-realization takes you to liberation finally. And the names, starting from Udbala Deva, Abhinava Gupta, the most important name, and Kshemaraja, and all of them, the important works are Shiva Sutra, Vijnana Bhairava Tantra, Spandakarika, and Kularnava Tantra, and the likewise. So that is about Kashmira Shaivam. We are shifting over to Veera Shaiva tradition, which is generally considered to be concentrated in and around Karnataka, because the prominent acharyas from Veera Shaivism are from there, so it is considered that way. But Veera Shaivism has its traditions which have extended to various different parts of India, and which is still thriving in places as far as Kedarnath and Kashi also. This is, in general, historically speaking, it's an old sect of Shaivism, but a very clear track of its historic growth and the chronology and all that is understood more after the popular person who brought it back to life, who reformed the tradition and brought it back to life, who is none but Basavanna. So what happened to this school before Basavanna's arrival, and how it was handled, and who were the gurus, at least the Guru Parampara names and few are there available, but their roles and what was the starting point, all that is still not historically available to us. But we can be sure that Basavanna is not the founder of this religion, but he propagated it, reformed it in a way unimaginably big scale, and today it is taken to a level where Basavanna is considered to be the founding father for Veera Shaivism. But Veera Shaivism has existed even before him, because he has his own gurus, the acharyas, who have propagated it even before his times. The sources for Veera Shaivam goes all the way back to, or the first reference to Veera Shaivam as a school of Shaivism goes back to the Shaiva Agamas. Now, I was telling you about the Shaiva Agamas when we discussed it, how Shaiva Agamas speak about different ways of attaining mukti also, and Veera Shaivites are identified as a group of Shaivites, but the deficiencies in each of it are to be understood too. That is exactly why the Shaiva Agamas talk about them, and more importantly, the Veera Shaivites themselves consider a few of the Shaiva Agamas, or in some schools all of them, as their Pramanas too. Though not primary Pramanas, it is accepted as the Pramanas. So though they are available in many parts of India, it is still popularly understood as a religion which is there in Karnataka. There are scriptures which are in languages like Sanskritam too, but major part of it exists in Kannada as what is called as Vachana Sahitya. Now, Vachana Sahitya is a very simple and a regional approach in Kannada language by Vasavanna and several of his followers. It's a compilation of works of many teachers of this school, and these are vachanas, which means conversations that they have, through which, in a very simple short forms or poems, the sahityas or the compositions have been used as with conversation as a tool, has been used to explain the philosophy. So, you know, it will be like striking a conversation, and through which they bring out the philosophy. Now, that's a very easy and regional approach to take the religion to people who are not intellectually charged, or people who are intellectually supreme. So this is similar to the Samayacharyas using Tamil as a language, in very simple form, propagating the philosophy embedded within their compositions. Now this is how the core religion, which is made out of these Pramana works, are used to be interpreted in local languages, so that it can attract a wider crowd or wider audience, and more people are attracted towards it, and now they come in close contact with Parameshwara through these acharyas, who make it simple for us. The earliest reference to the word Veerashaivas, as I told you, comes from the Shivagamas. Agamas, while referring to various different types of Shaivites like Adi Shaivas, Anu Shaivas, and all of them, it also refers to Veerashaivites and talks about their characteristics and their philosophy and beliefs too. So you can be sure that Veerashaiva is dated that old. So, you know, I put at par with the Agamas. And Agamas also speak to an extent, it elaborates the basic philosophies, the principles of Veerashaivas, like the Shadastala and the Gurulinga Jangama concept and all that. What each of it is, we'll see now. So, as I told you, though it is concentrated in and around Karnataka today, the Veerashaiva traditions have the concept of five important monasteries or mutts that are situated in five prominent pilgrimage centers. That includes Rambhapuri, which is Ballehalli in Karnataka, Ujjain, the Mahakala Kshetra in central India, Sri Sailam in Telangana today, and the Sri Sailam Kshetram, which is also one of the Tevaram shrines, then Kedarisura Kshetram or Kedarnath in the Himalayas, finally Varanasi, Kasi Mahakshetram. So the tradition of five mutts, you have two of it in the two North Indian pilgrimage centers, Kedarnath and Varanasi, one in Central India in Ujjain Mahakala Kshetram, and two in South India in Rambhapuri and Sri Sailam. So it is spread wide across the country, and it is believed that five acharyas or panchacharyas, as they are referred to, they are regarded as the actual founding fathers for the religion, or the sthapanacharyas for the tradition of Veerashaivites. And each of them are believed to have established one monastery in each of the five places that I told you. The Rambhapuri, Ujjain, Kedarnath, Kashi and Sri Sailam. So each of these five acharyas, that includes Renukacharya, Marula, Ekomra, Panditarayadru and Vishwaradhyaru. So these are the five acharyas: Renukacharya, Marula, Ekoramradhyaru and Panditaradhyaru, Vishwaradhyaru. So these are the five acharyas or the panchacharyas who have established these five monasteries in five different centers of pilgrimage. So they are the sthapanacharyas for the religion. Then you have the concept of Veerashaivites, as you see they find references in the Shaiva Agamas itself. So there are several traditions that are commonly shared between Siddhanta and the Veerashaivites, though there are striking differences in the philosophy. A few traditions and concepts are considered common in both. So you have the tradition of venerating the 63 Nayanmar saints, or the 63 Puranathru, as they are called, people who are explained in the Puranas of Bhaktas, the Bhakta Puranas. So they also include the 63 of them. The names of these 63 are it is in some cases translated into Kannada, some places it is very direct translation, sometimes it is very not so popular dialect of Kannada, but the 63 Nayanmars as 63 Puranataru are accepted within the Veerashaiva tradition. And then you have the devotees who followed the footpath laid by the Sthapanacharyas and the Puranataru, who are called as the Sharanataru. And this also is a long list. There are several of them who have been included into the list, But the most important ones are Allama Prabhu or Prabhudeva as he is called. Then you have Basavanna and Akkamadevi and more. That's a long list too. So I'm just calling out the names of three prominent ones. Prabhudeva, Basavanna and Akkamadevi. So the tradition has three different Acharya groups. You have the Sthapanacharyas, the five of them, starting from Renukacharya. Then you have the 63 Puranathru, the 63 Nayanmars, followed by the Sharanaru or the people who followed suit. And mostly the authority work or the traditional book to understand Veerashaivam is the Vachana Sahitya. The most of these Vachana Sahitya is available from the 12th century only. And the traditions here involves worshipping eight important aspects, which is called as the Ashtavarana concept, wherein you have a lingam or the Ishtalingam as they call it, and Guru, the Acharya who is brought in, Jangama, and then Padhodaka, which is the holy water which is given as Tirtha, Prasadha, Bhasma, Rudraksha and Panchakshara. Now Bhasma, Rudraksha and Panchakshara is common to many schools of Shaivam. That is the sacred ashes, Rudraksha beads and the Panchakshara mantram. Then Shiva Prasadha and the Padhotaka, which is the water from washing the holy feet of the Guru, and Shiva Prasadam, that's the offering for Shiva. Then you have the concept of Guru, Linga and Jangama, which is Linga is with the Ishtalinga, the form of Shiva, manifestation of Shiva, which these people, the Veerashaivites especially, carry in a locket which is tied to their neck. They are supposed to wear it more like a Mangala Sutra for women and walk around with it. They always carry it with them. And the Shiva Puja for them is to open the locket, bring out the Shivalingam, keep it in their, resting the lingam in their left palm, worship and continue perform all the rituals. After the end of the ritual, the Shivalingam is again put inside the locket and logged, and they continue with their day-to-day activity. Now this is a daily tradition. So you have the linga and the guru who is brought into the diksha, and then the devotee. So you have these eight concepts that are to be worshipped and that are revered for them. It's called as the Ashtavarana concept. And then you have the five different acharas or five different schools of worship, where you have the Lingachara, Sadhachara, Shivachara, Brityachara and Ganachara. So each of it is like different modes of worship that you follow in the Veerashaiva tradition. Kannada scriptures, as I told you, are like mostly the predominant language. And finally, the Shadasthalas include Bhakta, Mahesha, Prasadhin, Pranalinga, Sharana and Aikya. These are the Shadasthalas or the six layers, which six steps of spiritual progress. So you become a Bhakta first, then you become Mahesha, then you become Shivaprasada yourself, then you understand the Pranalinga within you, or you know the Atma, which is the Lingam, nothing but the Lingam, as you understand Sharana, and finally Aikya. So this is the scale of progress that one takes on their spiritual journey. So you have, this is an age-old tradition referred to in the Shaiva Agamas first. Second, their traditions are also referred to in the Agamas. So you have the Panchacharya, starting from Renukacharya, each of whom have established mutts in five pilgrimage centers. But the tradition became more popular post 12th century by the great reformer Basavanna, and the concept of Ashtavarana, the eight aspects of worship for them, and the Shadasthala, which means the six-stepped progression one takes in a spiritual journey. So you have the concept of Panchacharyas, followed by the 63 Puranathrus or the Nayanmar saints are also worshipped there. Then you have the Sharanas or the people who followed the footsteps of these Acharyas. So this is about the Veerashaiva tradition. And then Shivadvaitam. Shivadvaita is a philosophy of a sage called Shrikanta, who is believed to have existed. His historic timeline is put in the roughly 2000 years back, and he is one of the four prominent commentators on the Brahma Sutra. The other three being Adi Shankara, Madhvacharya and Ramanujacharya. So Brahma, the commentators on Brahma Sutra. The resulting philosophy, the way he interpreted Brahma Sutra, is called as Shivadvaita or Shiva Visishtadvaita, in fact, which doesn't seem to be very different from the non-dualism or constrained non-dualism, as you can call, limited non-dualism, as you can call it, of that of Ramanujacharya. Shrikanta transferred the Shaiva philosophy into a Vedantic terminology, because it was mostly Siddhanta tradition, which Srikanta handled in a way, interpreted in a way that it can be put as a Vedantic school too. And there are different historians giving different timelines. Going by the fact that he gave Brahma Sutra Bhashya, he's put roughly 2000 years back, and a few feel that he's more from a later period. But that aside, there is nothing about his personal life or his Divya Charitram that we know to comment upon it. Moreover, he catalyzed the religion that he propagated is more, I mean, he did not propagate it as a religion. In fact, he didn't want it to, like Veerashaivam or Shaiva Siddhantam, he didn't propagate it as a religion, but it was more like a philosophy that he advocated by commenting on the Brahma Sutras, interpreting on the Brahma Sutras. Still from his writings, we can be sure that he is a Mahajnani and a very good orator and a debater too, because commenting on the Brahma Sutras will mean that he will have to look at the works of other commentators who have existed before or clear all the doubts without leaving spaces for future commentators to come and bring down our philosophy. So the way he has put forward his arguments are very clearly giving us a clue that he is a very good orator and a debater. And according to his philosophy, that of Srikanta's philosophy, Shiva is the creator of the world with no other purpose but the creation and all that follows it, which includes sustenance, controlling it, conducting the universe and all its activities, and finally destructing it. All of it is a divine game for him. He is the effective cause of creation, and his Shakti, it is also the material cause for the functioning of the world. Shiva takes the form of the universe. He transforms himself into the universe, pretty much like the Kashmira school, where the universe is considered to be a part of the divine physique of Shiva, though not directly but through his Shakti. So Shakti is nothing but the blessing or the power of the energy of Shiva. So through Shakti as a channel, he manifests into the whole universe. He is transcendent, he is glorious, he is unaffected by any of the qualities of the universe or by any activities that he involves in. He has a spiritual, I mean, he has a divine physique, and he lives in a world which is luminous. The world as we cannot even imagine it. It is extremely brilliant and luminous, and, you know, just has absolute bliss filled out in it. Or what can be roughly translated into paradise. In some cases, you know, the technical terms translating it kind of does not really give the actual word, so I'm just going as close as I can. So it is that paradise which can be entered only by the souls that have attained or mukti, or those that have liberated to go and join Shiva there. Purification process, devotion and meditation on Shiva as the Jivatma here, which is void of spiritual or the sacred heart. Now he brings in the concept of Dharakasha, which is like that blanket of knowledge or the sky of knowledge, the ether, which is, you know, attaining which within you causes liberation. Now that is what is interpreted in the Chidambara Mahanatanam also, where the concept of Dharakasa comes in. That is considered to be the world which is absolute, which is blissful, which is never ending, and, you know, that is just filled with knowledge, the Chitrambalam as it is caused, and Shiva as Nataraja performs his Paramananda Tandava there. So, you know, observing that or understanding that from within helps us liberate and walk a path of knowledge to go to this paradise where Parameshwara is there. And then the freedom appears only after a step-by-step process. It is through preliminary realizations, including, you know, the difference between body and soul, and a level where you reach where there is absolutely no compromise on faith, and which helps you to bring in a sense of detachment. So that bond which keeps a soul in chains here is detached, and you come out as a free being and understand your connect with Shiva. And then you have Appaya Dikshitendral, who is yet another very important name, who brought back or kind of caused a renaissance to Shiva Advaita much after the times of Srikanta. And so he accepted the philosophy and propagated it through several works, most of which are only known by titles today, but a good collection of which is still available, thankfully. So he brings in, he argued that the concept on Saguna Brahmam than on the Nirguna Brahmavadam. He understood that faith and devotion from within for Shiva, because it is like the primordial element for knowledge. Devotion to Shiva brings in jnana. So bhakti matures and it brings in jnana to move towards Parashiva or Nirguna Brahman. So the process starts with Shaguna Brahman to, you know, through guided by faith or bhakti, devotion, and this on a long journey takes you to a level where your bhakti gives birth to jnana, where you start, where you can start envisioning Shiva without any respective objects. You don't need a murti to concentrate upon, and that to him is the path of travel from Saguna Brahman to Nirguna Brahman. Apaidin Sridhendral is said to have worked on many works, and he has put in a lot of argument, and he says even if Advaita was Adi Shankaracharya's Advaita was an accepted religion, that which is impressed on us by great teachers of the past, Adi Shankara himself, the spiritual bent towards Advaita is produced only by the grace of Shiva. So in order to attain Advaita Mukti, Shiva Puja is what he has prescribed. That's why he has made several works on bringing out the Vedic tendency of Shiva worship and the need for Shiva worship, the procedures and the different ways of worshipping Shiva. And so when there were several intellectual arguments, debates and all that came in, through royal patronage, Apai Dikshitendral appeared in these debates to re-establish the Saivai tradition. So he says, even to achieve Advaita Mukti, Shiva Puja is necessary. It is only through understanding the Brahman as Shiva in the Saguna form, you reach a level of understanding it as a Nirguna Brahman and you attain liberation. So that is another school where several stotras, several works celebrating the greatness of Shiva was brought in. Finally, in a very short form, I will finish off three other schools. Lakulisha Pashupatam. Lakulam literally means a club or a mace, a stick-like weapon that one holds. So that form of, for the Lakulas or the Pashupatas here, Lakulishwara or the most important Acharya / God worshipped is none but Shiva, who walks with a club in his hand. So that form of Shiva is called as Lakulisha. He is considered as the 28th form of Shiva in a few Puranas. He is in fact believed to be a reviver of the school of Pashupati worship, which starts from the Indus Valley. You can recall the worship of Nandi, Pashupati and all that from the Indus Valley civilization, and how Shiva, the worship of Pashupati turned into be called as Pashupata school. His incarnation according to the Pashupatas is in a place called Kaya Rohan or Karwan in Gujarat today. It's an important place for them. And Pashupata Sutras are considered to be the authority text. And they believe in cause, which is the Karana, act, which is caused by the cause, which is the Karya, and divisibility or the Kala, Kala, and then Vidhi or your actual method that you choose, Yoga. All these five will take you to what is called as Dukhanta or the end of sufferings. So it starts from Karana, the cause, and Karya, the act, Kala, which is divisibility or, you know, the difference, differentiating element, and then you have Vidhi or the method, Yoga, which takes you to Dukkanta or the end of sufferings. There are a lot of aspects of Hatha Yoga and other tantric schools which has a direct influence on the Pashupata tradition. These Pashupatas are more like monastic orders. The men who have taken this upon as a practice for themselves bath in ashes collected from cremation ground thrice a day, but there are different schools to it. A few schools prescribe 5 times a day, a few schools say just once a day, and a few speaks about 3 times a day and all that, but at least once to a maximum of 5 or 6 you're supposed to bath in the ashes that are collected from the cremation grounds. Very long and undisturbed meditation process. That's why you bring in Hatha Yoga and other tantric practices, and these Lakulas suddenly start laughing by experiencing Shiva. So they are tuned to a level where, you know, they start laughing loud in a very uncommon manner, and they start roaring and making different noises by twisting their tongue. They don't give importance to food or any other aspects that creates distraction. So, you know, they don't even consider the taste or quantity of food important. If they get, they eat, and they just keep practicing their traditions. So laughing and making bham bham karam, or, you know, just calling out bham 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 and all that, is a part of the Lakula tradition. This Lakulisha Pashupata tradition split into many schools, two of which is very popular, the Kapalikas and the Kalamukas. Kapalikas, one of the branches. As the name goes, the Kapalika tradition considered the Bhairava form of Shiva as the most important form to be worshipped for liberation. They always carried a kapala or a human skull in their hand, a skull bowl in their hand, and also a katvanga, which is nothing but a trident made out of spinal bone with a skull on its attached to its top. So they carried these more like weapons. They considered realization of Shiva from within takes you to a level of liberation. And this kapala patra is with which they collected alms and ate and drank their water and other, even alcoholic drinks and all that, that was prescribed as a tradition. They, as I told you, worshipped Bhairava form of Shiva. It is more like a monastic order with no texts which are available today. We don't have. All that we get to know about these two schools predominantly is what is seen from literature from later period or a few works where other religious sects have condemned it. For example, Ramanujacharya has condemned traditions of Kalamukha Shaivas and all, but so it is only through these works that we understand a little about these traditions. And this was dominated by extremely esoteric rituals which are very unconvincing and to an extent, to a very great extent, even unpalatable for common devotees from other branches of Shaiva. They predominantly resided in cremation grounds and always moved as a groups. Their rituals are all mostly in the night times and, you know, taking a bath in the river and smearing themselves when they are wet with the cremation ashes and, you know, posing various meditative poses and yoga poses and commanding a sense of meditation, commanding the work of meditation on them for very long hours, and all that is a part of their tradition. Their motto of liberation was to become Shiva by developing a sense of balance with no difference in anything. That is why these people, they have no sense of attachment, because they want to develop a vision which is extremely balanced, not seeing an iota of difference in anything. The feel of owning something or disowning something and all that is lost according to their religious practices. The tradition over years lost patronage in South India, mostly because of more accepted schools like you know, Siddhanta and others that became popular here. And it went into, it still survives in various different names and monastic orders in the north. But it is not that all of them follow the same traditions or rituals. That varies by and large between different monastic orders. Then finally, the sixth school for today is Kalamukha tradition. This is another branch of the Pashupata tradition, and it is called by that name by the unique black streak of sign that they wear on their forehead. A kind of a tilaka which they apply on their forehead, which is made of black paste. And a school that received very good patronage starting from the 9th century here in South India itself. Many royal monarchs like Rashtrakutas, followed by Chalukyas, Cholas, all of them have patronized the Kalamukha school. This is generally, as a misconception, understand at par with the Kapalika school. That's not the case. Kalamukhas, in fact, were very established schools with authority books and acharyas and schools and colleges that propagated the tradition. In fact, their practices or traditions aren't filled with esoteric rituals like that of the Kapalikas. But here it is more a philosophy that they wanted to propagate as a school. Unlike the Kapalikas, who were more with self-realization and getting over with that alone. They weren't into propagating it as a philosophy to the world to ensure more people liberate and all that. It was at an individual level. So that is why this school received a lot of patronage, especially here in South India, till even the 12th, 13th century, till the end of the imperial Cholas. They did accept the Vedas and followed more the Nyaya and the Vaisheshika schools of Veda interpretation. They are in a few texts called as the Mahabharatins, and to them the worship of Bhikshatana form of Shiva is important. And they also carried a skull bowl, because that is what the Brahma Kapalam was, what was identical for Shiva as Bhikshatana. And so collecting alms in the Kapala and eating was considered to be a Mahavratam, because Bhikshatana himself did that. They also grow long hair and they knot it and make a bundle for themselves, and mostly wear black dress and Spatika Kundala and Spatika Mala in their necks. Wearing a Spatika Mala in their neck is considered an important tradition, as discussed in the condemning works. And then they also wear a sacred thread across their chest, made out either of animal hair or sometimes even human hair. These are more the rituals that they perform. These guys, the Kalamukhas, unlike the Kapalikas, are well settled monks. with royal patronage, as I told you, and they held even control and administrative control in several temples, several Shiva temples, as we can see. And after the period of popularity, mostly these schools kind of diluted after the 12th, 13th century and went on to be become a part of the Veerashaiva tradition, which was coming up there. So Kalamukha tradition, even before Veerashaivas, found a lot of patronage in Karnataka also. In fact, they have debated with the Jains as early as the 7th and 8th century and all. So in a way, they have safeguarded Shiva schools of Shaivite worship, which was more through the Nyaya and the Vaisheshika school of Veda practices. So not so popular historic works and fictions, people generally put the Kapalikas and Kalamukhas on the same scale. That is not to be done. The Kalamukhas are a more settled and a matured way of approach for Shiva worship, and which later on, after dilution and after it lost its patronage, went on to merge with the Veerashaiva schools. So that is with a few selected documented schools of Shaivism. And as you can see in all of this, common factors were worship of Shiva, realization and understanding the connect between the souls and Parameshwara. The differences are way too many, starting from defining Shiva, his attributes, his characteristics, defining the soul, the connect between the souls and Parameshwara, and the creation concept, what exactly is liberation, whether it's an instant process or a progression or a step-by-step process. So all of that differs by and large. So this, in a nutshell again, is about a very basic introduction to the different schools of Shaivism. Starting tomorrow, for the next 3 days, we'll concentrate more on Siddhanta Shaivam. So tomorrow will be on the how the school of Siddhanta Shaivam came into being, the Acharyas who propagated this religion, and about the important works, the 14 Shastras, as we call it, the 14 important titles for Siddhanta Shaivites. I'll introduce that tomorrow, followed by the concepts of Siddhanta Shaivism, philosophy of Siddhanta Shaivism, and all these spiritual questions as answered by Siddhanta tradition on the 9th day. And the last day will be on the rituals and traditions that are followed for Siddhanta Shaivam and Shiva worship in general too. Ponnum meiporulum tharuvane, bogamum thiruvum punarpane, pinnai enpidayai poruppane, pidayalam thavira panippane, inna tanmayen endru ariyavunna emmane, elivanda virane, annam vaihum vayal palanathani aarurane marakkalumame, vaazhga andanar vanavaraninam, வீழ்க தன்புணல் வேந்தனும் மோங்குக, ஆழ்க தீயதெல்லாம் அரண்நாமமே சூழ்க, வையகமும் துயர் தீரவே, வான்முகில் வழாது பெய்க மலிவளம் சுரக்க, மன்னன் கோன்முறை அரசு செய்க குறைவிலாது உயிர்கள் வாழ்க, நான்மறை அறங்கள் ஓங்க நத்தவம் வேள்வி மல்க, மேன்மைக்குள் சைவநீதி விளங்குக உலகமெல்லாம், மூர்த்தியெல்லாம் வாழி எங்கள் மோனகுரு வாழி, அருள் வார்த்தை என்றும் வாழி அன்பர் வாழி பராபரமே. எல்லாம் ஸ்ரீ தியாகராஜ கிருபை, ஸ்ரீ தியாகராஜ மகாராஜோ விஜயதே. ஆரூரா தியாகேசா.